It's the Security Weekly News, episode 291. I'm Doug White, and it's Friday, the 22nd of April, 2023. We've got Elon, Klopp, Eval PHP, VMware, Google, Fancy Bear Strikes Back, Routers, 3CX, Air and Leyland, and more on this episode of the Security Weekly News.
This is a Security Weekly production for security professionals by security professionals. Please visit securityweekly.com/subscribe to subscribe to all the shows on our network.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week. Your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News.
Did you know that Active Directory is exploited in 9 out of 10 cyber attacks? With access to Active Directory, attackers can gain control of your network. To keep attackers out, you need to find and fix Active Directory security gaps. Meet Purple Knight, a free security assessment tool that scans your environment for hundreds of vulnerabilities and helps you fix the problems. Ready to reduce your Active Directory attack surface? Download Purple Knight, the number one Active Directory security vulnerability assessment tool. Visit securityweekly.com/Semperis, S-E-M-P-E-R-I-S, for more information.
Business Security Weekly is recorded on Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Each week, we address the challenges facing CISOs through our guest interviews, including former and active CISOs. Our news segment is focused on leadership and communication to better help security leaders translate and communicate security risks into business risks. Jason Albuquerque, Ben Carr, Tyler Robinson, and others add their expertise to the conversation. I'm Matt Alderman, and I hope you search for Business Security Weekly in your favorite podcast catcher and subscribe to download our latest content.
Yeah, all right. Well, hopefully you enjoyed 420 for the good reason and not the bad reason. I was wondering where all the traffic went when I was driving to class yesterday, and then I kind of noticed that everybody was sitting in front of the weed shop. So it was, I was like, oh, there, that's what's going on. I really wasn't aware of it. I'd forgotten all about what day it was. Well, apparently March 2023 was the biggest month ever for ransomware. 459 attacks were reported by analysts, which represents an increase of 91% over February and a 62% increase over March of 2022. Now, according to this article, the reason for this huge increase was a vulnerability in Fortress Go Anywhere MFT secure file transfer tool. The Klopp gang exploited that vulnerability to steal data from 130 companies in just the first 10 days of the month. So it sounds like we need to get a posse together, y'all. The Klopp gang done robbed the stage again. But Klopp performed 129 recorded attacks in March, according to a report from the NCC group. Lockbit had 97 attacks to take second place, and other groups that were noticeably active were Royal, Black Cat, Bianliang, Play, Blockbuster, Stormius, I don't know how to say that one, Medusa, and Ransom House, but Klopp and Lockbit were by far and away the biggest nasties of the month. The most targeted sector was industrials, which received 147 of the total attacks during the month. Consumer cyclicals, I had no idea what that was. I had to look it up. That one includes automotive, housing, entertainment, and retail, which are apparently very cyclical industries. I never heard that term, but tech was third. I think this underscores what we've been telling you for a long time. Patch and prepare for the worst, because it seems to be a thing. And there's going to be more 0 days. There's going to be more vulnerabilities. If you're not ready for them and you don't patch, even if you do patch, eventually you're going to get got. So be ready. Eval PHP is an outdated, legit WordPress plugin, but it's being used to compromise websites by injecting stealthy Trojans onto the site. This thing was a plugin that allows site administrators to embed PHP code on pages and post anything on your WordPress site, and then execute that code when the page is opened in the browser. So this sounds like a problem, right? But obviously, if you have it all locked down, then it does exactly what it's supposed to do. Now, part of the problem is the plugin has not been updated or supported in the past 10 years. So it's more than a decade old, and it's had no updates or anything. And they called it an abandonware project by, you know, the WordPress community, which means it's kind of like a really gnarly old tennis ball that you found under a dumpster and you picked up and then you caught Mekong jungle rot, and now your hand smells kind of funny, and dogs keep following you around? Yeah. Anywho, Securi reported that there is a trend of using EvalPHP to embed malicious code on otherwise harmless WordPress pages, and that this activity has surged in April of 2023. The plugin is now having an average of 4,000 malicious installations per day, according to this report. The injections detected this month deliver a previously documented payload that allows remote code execution capabilities on the compromised site. Securi said that we really, really, really need to delist these types of plugins and that there are other ones. So WordPress owners are recommended to take action to secure your admin panel, keep your WordPress site up to date, and use a web application firewall to prevent this stuff from happening, or you're going to get got. So there is no patch for it. If you need to use EvalPHP, either if you can remove it, remove it. And if you can't remove it, block it. So do something. VMware dealt with a vRealize Log Insight security vulnerability, which would allow remote attackers to gain remote code execution. The tool that is being targeted is called VMware Aria Operations for Logs. And it basically is a log analysis tool that, man, I mean, if you've ever, you know, administered VMware, and I have, you know that you generate massive, massive numbers of logs, even on my small sites. And if you're using vRealize, they're even bigger. So this is a tool that lets you help manage all those logs. The bug itself is a deserialization vulnerability, which can be used to run arbitrary code as root on compromised systems. And it can be exploited remotely by unauthenticated attackers in a low complexity attack. So that's, as they say in the biz, bad. Like probably about as bad as it gets. A second flaw, which would allow remote attackers who have administrator privileges, which is not as bad because now it's an insider threat, but attackers with administrator privilege are able to execute arbitrary command as root as well, and they addressed that in a recent patch. So not as bad as the first one. But the release of VMware Aria Operation, or Aria, sorry, I'm going to pronounce it correctly. So it's, you know, Aria, like the thing in an opera where somebody sings a solo. Aria Operations for Logs 8.12 patches both issues. There's apparently no evidence, according to VMware, that these were being exploited in the wild, but now that they're being known and published, well, you know, watch out if you're exposing yourself online, and you can take that any way you like. Other critical vRealize bugs were patched in January, so if you are using vRealize, it really might be a good time to just take a deep breath and say, spring cleaning, let's patch and update. I know it's a big deal to patch and update VMware. I've done it. I need to do mine. Gonna do it. Mine's, of course, walled off, so you can't actually get to it from outside, but nevertheless, it still needs to be patched and updated. Google patched another zero day in Chrome today, on Tuesday. This one is a high severity integer overflow issue in Skia. Google Tag reported the bug originally, and Google said they were aware an exploit exists in the wild for the vulnerability. So people are publishing exploits. This is the second zero day this year already that has been patched in Google Chrome. The latest update of Chrome 112 has 8 security fixes. 5 of those vulnerabilities were reported by external researchers, and 4 were rated as high severity vulnerabilities. Google's already paid out about $20,000 in bug bounties on these. They did not have to pay for this latest one because it was discovered by Google Tag, and they don't pay for internal fines, I guess. Too bad, they should. The United States and the United Kingdom agencies have issued a joint advisory to warn about attacks on Cisco routers by Russian APT Fancy Bear. Fancy Bear has been linked by the United States and the United Kingdoms to a Russian military intelligence unit in the GRU. The report said that the group had been targeting U.S., Ukrainian, and other European countries, starting in 2021, and that the exploited vulnerabilities still pose a significant risk. Cisco said, quote, "It is deeply concerned by an increase in the rate of high sophistication attacks on network infrastructure." The advisory, which was released today from the National Cybersecurity Center in the UK and CISA in the United States, along with the FBI and the NSA, relates to exploitation of a CVE from 2017, which had been reported, patched, and mitigated in 2017. Cisco's been warning about in-the-wild exploitation of this since 2018, but guess what? It's still out there. The flaws are in the Simple Network Management Protocol subsystem, which is SNMP, and it is in Cisco iOS and iOS XE. And it would allow a remote authenticated attacker to execute arbitrary code on the targeted device by sending custom SNMP packets. Well, Fancy Bear used the SNMP exploits to deploy malware that allowed them to attain additional device info and enable backdoor access on sites. The malware being used is named Jaguar Tooth, and there is an NCSC report which has all the details that's linked in that article I put on the website. The malware does not survive reboot, but you know what? I don't think people reboot their Cisco devices very often. I mean, I've done response on them and found, you know, Cisco stuff that have been running for 10 years and never been rebooted ever. It's not designed to be rebooted. And, you know, people use the running conf and they forget to overwrite the startup conf, and then they have a power outage and all hell breaks loose. Patching is an obvious solution to this, but it's always a challenge with your Cisco stuff. And Cisco does have a separate blog post that's also attached to that article that has resources for hardening their devices, detecting attacks, and performing forensics in case you didn't do any of the other stuff. But, you know, if you can patch it, patch it. If you can't, mitigate it, but be aware of it at the very least. So, you know, if you've got old Cisco stuff running, and almost everybody does that uses it, you know, be aware. And speaking of routers, I have a lot of them. I used to buy them on eBay all the time when I would see them for sale. I used to buy tons of them, and I used them in class. I used them for fun. And one thing I found that this article is providing information for you, that we don't always wipe them when we sell them. Yeah. I bought some from a liquidator once that had full configurations and pretty much everything on them, including iOS. And in every single Cisco conf, if you've ever looked at a Cisco conf, it's a text file. And unless you know the command service password encryption, and be careful with that command too, if you aren't familiar with it, but be careful. It, you know, you will find right there in the conf in plain text are passwords. And guess where those passwords are also used? Probably all over your company. When I did pen tests, I usually asked if they would give me paper copies of the conf so I could look at them, you know, if that was in scope. And, you know, when you see that the Cisco enable password is Gandalf 420, you know that's probably going to also be used somewhere else, like, say, as the root password on their servers. Anyway, ESET acquired 18 secondhand enterprise routers that were Cisco, Fortinet, and Juniper, and found that 9 of the 18 devices, which included core routers from massive companies, were still completely configured. Only 5 of them were actually wiped. My record wasn't quite that good. I would say that of about 100 routers and switches I bought over, say, 4 or 5 years, about 25 of them had full configs on them. All those did have passwords in the conf, though. I never, ever had one that somebody had done service password encryption on. And you can crack that, too, by the way. Some were from a government agency that I bought. I mean, literally. I actually tried to notify them about it, and they got all uppity about, oh, so you've committed a crime against the United States government? And I'm like, dude, you're the U.S. Department of, we won't get into what they were, but they got all threatening. So I just like used the better part of valor and hung up the burner phone I used to call them. I was like, I was trying to help you here, but you want to be a jerk about it? Fine. I'll just sell it to somebody else. Have a nice day. I didn't actually sell it. Black helicopters often circle near where I live at night. So, you know, ESET's list included a large tech company with more than 10,000 employees. I highly recommend doing this as a hobby. I used to buy hard drives like this too. But please, for your own sake, add it to your list of hygiene requirements and wipe your old equipment. I know it's a pain to do, but before you sell it to Crazy Johnny, slightly used routers and tacos, wipe it, and wipe it effectively, because there's probably somebody out there buying them for fun or for ill will that will be able to get to this stuff. Krebs released some details about the 3CX attacks, and if you missed it, there was a lot of stories about 3CX a few weeks ago, which is a VoIP management interface. So this is a PBX-type device that manages VoIP phones. According to Krebs' story, North Korean hackers used a very large number of fake executive accounts on LinkedIn to get people to open a job offer that contained malware. I mean, wait, you mean I'm not getting a 7-figure job teaching Python to executives in Hawaii? I may need to retract an email I just sent to my boss, but anyway, the malware was targeting Mac and Linux users at defense and crypto firms. Okay, Krebs, this article's got 2 semicolons in one sentence. That's never a good thing. Kurt Vonnegut hated semicolons, and so do I do too. And if you use more than one in a single sentence, you know, come on. But apparently, this all related to software supply chain attacks that were nested within earlier software supply chain attacks. The original attack was back in March when 3CX disclosed that the Windows and macOS desktop applications for their product were compromised with malicious code, which would allow the ability to download and run code on all the machines with the app installed, which is, of course, a bad thing. Now, this affected more than 600,000 customers and 12 million users worldwide. Mandiant released a report on Wednesday, which said that the original attack probably began in 2022 due to a 3CX employee installing a malware-embedded package, which had been distributed in an earlier software supply chain compromise in a software package from trading technology called Xtrader. So Mandiant said this was the first time they've seen a supply chain attack lead to another supply chain attack, which is pretty interesting. The initial attack was traced to a VPN which used the employee's corporate credentials 2 days after their personal computer was compromised. Now, Mandiant said the attack source was Lazarus, which is a North Korean state-sponsored attack group. Kaspersky and Elastic had reached this conclusion earlier. Mandiant probably knew about it, you know, before they did, but they didn't release the report until Wednesday. So there is a whole story here about how all this happened. And, you know, I guess my point with it is you may want to remind your people to be very, very careful about opening any sort of file, especially if it's sent to you unsolicited. Even if it says you're going to get a seven-figure coding job with housing provided on the island of Bali, these ads were mostly job offers from HSBC, Hong Kong Bank, for C++ Python developers. But if you think someone's sending you anything on LinkedIn, I would look up the company. The last time I got a job offer on LinkedIn, which I actually got a legitimate job offer not too long ago. I wish it had been for more money. I might have taken it. But I actually looked up the company and the division and the person whose name was on it. And then I called them and asked about it before I opened this link. Don't open these things, no matter how tempting. This is a common strategy of Lazarus. So they and a lot of us get targeted by these things. A report that starts with the Pentagon Papers, and if you don't know what that is, it was a massive classified document link about the Vietnam War, and it, you know, basically ends up today with us bringing a 21-year-old airman who worked in IT and decided to wow his juvenile devotees by showing them all the cool intel he had at work on Discord. Well, it basically says that, you know, this article is basically saying you need to be ready for this. The article is a good starting point for thinking about insider threats to your organization when some employees has access. It's really, really scary if you think about IT people. I mean, it doesn't have to be top secret stuff. It doesn't have to be national security stuff. It can just be stuff that's damaging to your company, either in the form of liability or lost data. I remember when I did where some IT people were reading everyone's emails and they were taking funny stuff out of people's emails and posting memes about it internally until one of the people that was being posted about noticed their picture on a meme hanging in the IT space and filed a complaint and a lawsuit. Not to mention like Tesla people watching the cams in violation of just about everything Tesla said they wouldn't do. Well, anyway, you might want to give this a read. It's got some help starting assessing insider threats and some good tips. Considered the most extreme bass player in the history of glam bands, he is famous for his use of spandex, carefully strategic nudity, and onstage wardrobe malfunctions. Please welcome Aaron Leyland.
Yay! How's it going? It's like, has WordPress, did it go away for a while, or did we just get bored of talking about it?
We just got bored of talking about it. Oh, it's massive. It's still there.
Yeah. It's like every day there's night seems to be an article on WordPress. And for some reason, I think I just don't read them anymore. Cause I was like,
yeah.
Ooh, a WordPress article. They kind of fixed everything.
Yeah. It was kind of like mass shootings in the United States. We just don't see the reports anymore because, you know, there's like 17 of them every hour.
To it.
Yeah. It's like literally we have so many mass shootings now. It's just like, yeah, okay. Don't even bother to, it's on page 36, you know, of the newspaper.
Is there a really good reason why people are still using WordPress so much? Is it just because it's cheap?
I mean, it's cheap and easy. And I mean, you know, it's something that any, like, you know, when a high school teacher wants to put up a site with some extra math problems on it and they don't want to go to the IT unit of the school because it takes time and you have to fill out forms, just jump on WordPress and throw up a website.
Oh, cool. Throw up a website. We can get involved in some shadow IT and then we can have the whole college sort of front and word.
Yeah, and a lot of them are dead. They're just sitting there, you know, out in space, and nobody's used them in years, and then people take them over and use them for all kinds of mischief.
Yeah, well, that's fun. Also, hard drives. I used to buy hard drives when I was getting into cyber, because running autopsy on them and stuff like that used to be like lots of fun.
It is. Routers and switches are fun too. You should try that part out, because they were pretty cheap. You know, you could get like a Cisco, like a 2621 router for like $50. And I would buy them like in like pallet lots. So you get like 20 at a time and just get them, turn them on and see if they had iOS on them, which is not, you're not supposed to do. And if they had comps, and the comps were hysterical.
I live in a really high flat in London with very few bedrooms. So my ideas of buying many routers and switches, I'll have to find somewhere.
You can use them to make bookcases. You put like five on each side and put a board across them, and you've got, there you go. You got a Cisco bookcase of, you know.
And then I could heat my apartment with them.
You could if you turn them all on. Yeah, absolutely. They're far, far more efficient than, you know, burning old logs and garbage to keep your apartment warm.
Well, yeah, our three coats and a big quilt. Okay, thanks, Doug. So apparently a creepy website can find every photo that exists of you offline or online. No, I'm offline. Somebody put me offline before we go back online. The link's in the show notes. The website Primeyes, not Pimp Eyes, as someone called it the other day, has been called on Twitter the most disturbing AI website on the internet. That's pretty cool. For its ability to locate every picture of you that's available online. Basically, that's not true, though. As the research that I've done over the last couple of days, it does not include social media. So no fun there, then. The article continues, a new facial recognition website has left the internet shocked after it is helping people find every picture that exists of themselves online. It uses a specialized bot to locate every picture of a person that's ever been shared online and is emerging using an artificial intelligence tool. I can also tell you that's not true either, because there's some pictures on the internet that I know of myself that are way back, like my MySpace picture, for instance, and it didn't find that. So anything that's been archived a little bit, it probably can't find it. I can't find it anyway using the tool. So touted as a stalker's dream. So that's not me and you, Doug. That's other people. It is an identity search engine that's said to be similar to, yet a bit more sophisticated than, Google's reverse image search tool, which I did run through some of my pictures earlier, and it just came up with them pictures. It didn't come up with pictures similar or other pictures of me. It just came up with that picture, which I guess that's what it's meant to do, maybe. I don't know. Maybe someone can tell me. Okay. Using the website, you could upload a photo of yourself and then use it to find any embarrassing old photos, even random crowd shots that you've somehow managed to photobomb without realizing. The tool does come at a cost. So, stalkers beware, you're going to have to fork out some cash. The Protect subscription costs $79.99 a month, and the advanced version is $299.99. But after paying the amount, it'll give you, that's the large amount, access to unlimited image searches, as well as access to the websites hosting your photo. Despite being criticized as creepy, which me and Doug have never been criticized as being, PimEyes has also been praised by people for improving their privacy online. Well, I guess that's the point, maybe, sort of, definitely. Well, that's the point, according to the creators. One Twitter influencer, Kirsten Ruby, said, "I like PimEyes. The tool is controversial, but it is one of the best tools for finding who has used my face without consent." I didn't look up her face. I didn't see if I needed to use it without consent. But this is what PimEyes has to say. PimEyes is an online face search engine that goes through the internet to find pictures containing given faces. PimEyes uses face recognition search technologies to perform a reverse image search, find a face, and check where the image appears online. Our Face Finder helps you find a face and protect your privacy. Facial recognition online systems allows you to search by image. PMize is a face, picture search, and photo search engine available for everyone. It is a great tool to audit copyright infringement, which I guess is really good. We believe that you have the right to find yourself on the internet and protect your privacy image. So they reckon they created PMize as a multi-purpose tool allowing you to track down your face on the internet, reclaim image rights, and monitor your online presence. I guess this is probably good for really famous people that I guess people pay to use their face. But I find some good things. Right, we're going to go over and do a quick demo here. And hopefully I'll be able to pull this up really quick and share my screen. And what you will see here is we have the dashboard. I won't show that too much, but we also have the alerts page. And I'm going to delete this one that I did earlier because, as we all know, demonstrations tend to go very wrong. And let's not hope that we do that online. Okay, so I took a picture in my living room. It was this one. And I uploaded it to the system. And it rather quickly processed. And then my alert, and that was off my full face, because I've done some others as well. And let's go back to the current page. And what we see here, it currently says no results. It actually, when I was trialing it earlier, it worked out pretty quickly. So let's see how it's going. Let's see how it's going. Oh, there we go. 34 results. And as you can see, there's some really exciting pictures of me mostly on Security Weekly News. This one here, if we look, we can go to the website. This was on Stogie Geeks with my friend Joe there. I miss being on Stogie Geeks very much. And you can also open the image bigger. I don't even know what's going on with my face there, but but it's okay. So there we go. That came up really quick. And on this subscription that I'm on here, it allows you to put three photographs on, and then as it just continuously pulls, I guess, and pulls up any new photographs. If we go back to the dashboard on alerts, I uploaded some other pictures. So I actually uploaded my internet dating profile picture, which has me drinking an espresso martini. You can't see it very well there. But strangely, it brought up a picture that wasn't in the full face one. So that was this picture. And this is actually a picture of myself and my friend Trevor when we were in Ukraine. And this, let's go to where I, yeah, they don't pretty quick anyway. And this actually went to a Boston Globe article. And there you can see there is Trevor and me in the Boston Globe. I am covering my face there, but strange, when it was the full face, it didn't find me, but I'm covering my face and it did find me. So there we go. Make of that what you will. But when we go back, I actually went back and it's been many years since I haven't had a beard. So I uploaded a photo where I haven't got a beard and it didn't find anything. But what it does say here, as I mentioned earlier, please note we are not looking for photos on social media. So I guess when I was previously in the military and didn't have a beard, my online profile wasn't very large, but also it didn't pull up the pictures of me with a beard, without the beard. So I don't know. The AI is good, but maybe it's not great. Maybe it's getting better. If you look here, you have like a $79.99 one that gives you 25 daily searches and 15 permanently set up alerts. But what it does do is the most interesting thing, really. It gives you a tool for drafting and sending up to 80 DMCA and GDPR takedown notifications. You can, there's probably a business idea here. For £300 a month, you can have 500 alerts. So you could probably manage the image of 500 people. I don't know. I don't know how long the longevity of that business idea is, but that's just along with the takedown requests. And if we look here for the takedown requests, they're looking your name, address, phone numbers, passport or ID, a photo scan of your signature, and some consent tools. So I don't know. Can you walk around the festival and see a hottie you like, take a picture of them, and then search for them on the internet? I'd say yes. Can you go on to internet dating and cut someone's picture out of it, screenshot it, as I did with my picture on internet dating earlier, and find out details of them if they have an online profile? I'd say yes. So, pretty interesting tool. What do you think, Dr. Doug?
I think it's a really interesting stalking tool. Like you said, I think if you're super, you know, high profile and people pay you for your image, then it probably is useful. But I'm also suspicious as what they're going to use my images for. I'd have to read all the fine print. And I do think it could be used as a stalking and or hunting tool. If I was looking for somebody I had a warrant for or something, I might jump on there. I don't know how legal that is and whatever your locale is, but, yeah. Definitely.
Interesting, actually, you brought up a good point there. You can actually go on there, submit your images, and like on Google Image of your house or apartment or ever, you can actually ask to be removed, and then you're not searchable in certain amounts for it. And if you pay the $299.99, it says there's a deeper search. So it doesn't really explain very well what that is either.
I find it hard to believe that many individuals are willing to pay $80 a month even to have this kind of service. You know, it seems more like a service that would be used by commercial entities at that price point. I mean, I'm not going to pay
or
that.
You're a super, super stalker with endless money.
It also seems like you could fool it. You could make fake images of people and then have it, you know, look what I found searching for Aaron. Here's a picture of him, you know,
right?
with seven
set
hookers
up a
and
website
a limousine.
With your name and like hundreds of images next to your name and see what it scrapes.
I don't know. All that stuff is very privacy worrying, I think. But I know they're trying to protect people's privacy, but it seems kind of worrisome at the same time. Very interesting. I had not seen that. And I will admit that when I first saw the link, I thought it said Pimp Eyes. I was one of the many.
You and the rest of the hosts.
I just glanced at it and went, Pimp Eyes? Who named their product Pimp Eyes? And then somebody had already commented like Pimp Eyes. And I was like, wait, it doesn't say Pimp Eyes, but it does look like that.
Security Weekly hosts have similar humor.
I think I'm going to go buy the domain Pimp Eyes if it's available. But
I hope it is. I'm going to get there before you.
Well, you probably will because I got to read this last story. Thanks, Aaron. Was that a segue or was that a segue? And finally, I'm not going to bash Elon Musk over his rocket exploding. I know you probably thought I was, but I'm not. I mean, that happens when you play with rockets and large quantities of explosive fuel being set on fire and shot into the sky. I mean, you know, stuff explodes. I mean, I could pick on him, but I'm not going to. Science is the ultimate frack around and find out sport. I mean, it really is, and it should be that way. And you know, people should be able to do stuff like that, although it gets a little scary at times. But as promised, on Twitter, they began removing thousands of blue check marks yesterday. This was part of Elon's new approach to clear the site of what he called, quote, the lords and peasants system. So I don't know if he's joined the Khmer Rouge, if he's trying to become like some kind. I don't really understand. Sounds a lot like 1984 to me. But anyway, that means a lot of big shots will lose their check marks unless they begin paying Elon a monthly fee to keep them. Elon said this would democratize journalism somehow and empower the voice of the people by somehow verifying anyone willing to pay $8 a month. Yeah, that just doesn't sound right to me. But Elon says a lot of things. I mean, and since Twitter seems to be rapidly turning into like 4chan plus, I don't think I'm going to be paying them anytime soon. Pope Francis, Donald Trump, Justin Bieber, Katy Perry, Lady Gaga, Ronaldo, Jack Dorsey, and all have so far dropped their check marks and refused to pay Elon $8 a month to keep their check marks. I never had one. I don't care if I have one or not. But, you know, honestly, I keep wondering if Elon sold Twitter short before he bought it. Probably illegal, but that never stopped a good scam anyway. That's the news. Thank you, Aaron. We'll see you next week on the Security Weekly News.